Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Flowchart Podcast. Flowchartpodcast at gmail.com is our email address. Thanks for tuning in live. If you're watching on the Flowchart Podcast YouTube channel, you can also subscribe to us on the various audio platforms. I'm Kevin. He's Gordon. Special shout out, special credit to anybody who, as we're recording, has already read the 44-page AIU PDF about Shelby Houlihan, which Gordon, just you sprung that on me. You, in combination with AIU, right as we're getting ready to go, you're like, hey, by the way, they released a decision.
Yes. So I appreciate you reading it for me. I had no intention of reading that. I'm not a big avid reader. So I was just watching you read it and you would say things out loud. And that's how I consumed all the information. I know you're not supposed to just read headlines. You're supposed to read the article. But I'm like 98% of the country. I just read the headline. And this headline basically confirmed that Shelby is going to be banned for 4 years. It showed the full report. We already knew she was banned for 4 years, but this is now the detailed, the reasoning of why they did not consider Shelby's justification for having nandrolone in her system. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what'd you think of the AIU's report? You're the one who read it.
Yeah, full disclosure. I didn't get all the way through because we ran out of time. Because they literally issued this, what was that, say 59 minutes ago. And by the time I was aware of it, it was about 20 minutes ago. I'm a quick reader, but not that quick. I zeroed in, though, on page 7 and 8 here, where it says basically the athlete's explanation. So Houlihan's explanation that the sample resulted from uncastrated boar wasn't going to be accepted. And they boiled it down to a number of reasons. And the way they phrase it in the report, it says the explanation presupposes a cascade of factual and scientific improbabilities, which means that in its composite probability is very close to zero. So it says first, the athlete would have had to have been served pork at the food truck despite ordering beef. Second, the pork consumed would not have been normal pork product ordered by the food truck, but uncastrated boar. Third, the uncastrated boar enters the food chain through completely different channels than pork. Fourth, it goes on to say the uncastrated boar in question was a small minority of uncastrated boars that, in addition, must have had elevated androgen levels. So it would have been a specific type of uncastrated boar, basically. Fifth, the pork product is pork stomach. Pork stomach, it says, is stripped of the inner layer, with the consequence that the outer muscle remains. Goes on and on to explain the anatomy of this boar. Sixth, it says the concentration of it was 2 to 3 times higher than the highest values reported in the scientific literature they put out, so it was a larger amount. Seven, it talks about the carbon isotope signature was not consistent with the type of pig that would have been consumed. And then It says one of the experts that testified the chance of a crypto child, which is the term for the animal here, ending up in the normal supply chain in the United States is far less than 1 in 10,000. So basically add all that up and then you have this long line basically of this of basic statistic improbabilities. Now the report goes on and it details Houlihan's defense, and I'm sure she's going to put out a statement later on today, but nothing I saw in there changed like the facts from what we knew initially and what we assumed the response would have, because we only heard really Houlihan's side of it, right? But we assumed based on her response what AIU, CAS, et cetera, the position they were taking. And this, from what I've seen so far, aligned with that.
Yeah, basically AIU is saying, hey, the odds of, you know, pig orful being in a beef burrito that you ordered, that's rare. The odds that the pig orful, first of all, the odds that it's pork is rare because you ordered beef. Then the odds that the pork is pig orful is rare. Then the odds that the pig orful is contaminated is rare. Then the odds that the contamination has a high level of nandrolone is rare. And so basically the probability is winning a roulette over and over and over, like five times in a row. Mm-hmm. And they said it ultimately was like a 1 in 10,000 chance that this happened. So 1 in 10,000 chance is more than 0 in 10,000. But I think the way that they rule is that it needs to, you can't just say like, hey, I was struck by lightning and that's why, you know, I missed my test or whatever. You'd have to prove that you actually were struck by lightning. Not just say like, hey, people get struck by lightning, so believe it, right? So I think the whole situation was they weren't able to, or Shelby's team wasn't able to come up with reasonable evidence that this could have happened to anyone. So they tried to like do a hair sample and a polygraph, but AIU decided not to accept that. Polygraphs, I guess, are easy to beat. I don't know, but I guess people think polygraphs are like, I think Hollywood kind of made us think polygraphs are like a legit forms of like defense, mm-hmm. but like in the real world, polygraphs are just kind of not used. You can see here's a question of in the polygraph question. Did you at any time knowingly ingest nandrolone? Answer, no. Did you intentionally ingest the drug nandrolone? Answer, no. Mm-hmm. So I have an opinion. Okay, you go.
Well, I was just say the thing with the hair sample, I think the hair sample is basically to disprove long-term use, which goes to, hey, why would she be doing this in the first place if it was just a one-time thing? Right? Like from a practical standpoint, if you talk to people who are familiar with anti-doping regulations or have covered doping in sport, basically you're looking at it from the perspective of, okay, there's got to be some utility to doing this. And if she was doing it for a longer period of time, it would have been evident in a hair sample, right? Because it has a longer history. Now that doesn't mean, but I think what they're saying, well, okay, that's fine. However, we have this sample that we saw where there's a positive test, and that's what we need to rule on. If you go to the bottom, if you're just looking for the TLDR, the cliff notes here, on page 41, starting at bullet point 135, it kind of goes to what you were saying before. It lays out a whole bunch of possible but unlikely things that needed to happen. So they're saying it's possible but unlikely that it contained offal. It's possible but unlikely that the ingestion of the offal would have resulted in the type of amount, right, in there as well. It's possible, you know, but unlikely that the the panel finds that that neither the hair analysis nor the polygraph resulted in sufficient proof for the athlete to satisfy a burden that the anti-doping rule violation was not intentional. So basically it lays out basically three things that are possible that could be a rationale for it, but aren't unlikely. And then you get to the the ruling there at the bottom, it says that the athlete has not satisfied her burden of proof on the balance of prohibition, that the anti-doping rule violation was unintentional. The anti-doping rule violation was therefore deemed to be intentional, right? Because it's one or the other. They have to decide intentional or unintentional. And they're weighing the two against each other. And they just said this evidence was not enough.
So now that you read the report, or at least read it in 20 minutes or less, like a natural you are. So I think that it comes down, there's three scenarios here, right? First scenario is she got and she took nandrolone via a burrito, right? And that's the case that they're trying to lay out. And the result is like that was like a 1 in 10,000 chance. So
yeah,
it most likely might not have been that situation. The second scenario, it was a faulty test. Now, they never defended that. They never tried to argue that the test was faulty. They did an athlete A and B sample. Tests can be faulty, but by now they should. You assume that the test is accurate. So that's the scenario that like, okay, well, no, that's not a case. So then third scenario, is this nandrolone got in her system some other way, right? Mm-hmm. And now you have to start thinking like, she didn't just wake up and nandrolone like got in her system. It literally, if it wasn't a burrito, it was something else. So what is that something else situation? Is it another, was it an intentional use that she's not telling us? Is it an unintentional use that she's not telling us? Like maybe she knows she unintentionally took it, but maybe she's using the burrito because it's more mainstream of an excuse. Maybe there's another reasoning actually that the nandrolone's in her system and we don't know that actual reason. But we know that if we're supposed to take this finding and as the truth, we know that the test was real and we know that it's not from pig orful. So where is it? Shelby is still maintaining her innocence. So what do we think is the reason Shelby Houlihan won't be running for the next 4 years?
So I think was the number 1 in 10,000? Is that what you said? Basically? Yeah. I mean, if you're going to take – it's obviously 1 in 10,000 can happen, right? It's not zero. It's not zero. So they're basically saying, okay, like her camp's basically saying, yeah, okay, 1 in 10,000 things can happen. It's rare, but it happens. They had to have some sort – if you're going to appeal, you have to appeal on some sort of grounds, right? So they have to go back and they have to look and they have to say, okay, well, if you're saying you didn't take this, we need to come up – you can't just be like, I didn't take it, because then they're going to say, well, you're banned. That's not – there's no grounds for an appeal there. So they need to present some sort of evidence here. I would think, though – they didn't have a ton of time because as they described before, they were like waiting and waiting and waiting to get charged. And then they expedited the process, which they outline in here as well, which meant it was just like one thing. And then it was done basically at that point. So, but they did have enough time, I think, to comb through that day and figure out what it was that was consumed by her throughout the course of the day. So I'm inclined to believe that this was their strongest case. Otherwise, they would not have put it forward. Right? Like, I'm sure went back, looked at all the receipts, looked at everything that she had done the last, I mean, probably went back farther than a week, you know, like to actually look. This is her career. Right? So looking at every single thing she ingested, vitamins, whatever that she had, and that this was the strongest case that they could make. Because again, they have to have some sort of, they have to put some sort of reason out there for why it was positive.
I feel like the Shelby situation is a trending topic among runners when they go on runs. And the topic is, do you think she did it? I think that is people, because Shelby was the belle of the ball leading all the way up to this moment. Everyone was like pro Shelby. She was like she was next big chance to get an Olympic medal in distance events. And then it all comes crashing down. And so there's people who are going to be in the I believe Shelby camp, and there's going to be people in the I don't believe Shelby camp. And now that we have this case in front of us where the Shelby camp needs to believe a 1 in 10,000 chance, the I don't believe Shelby camp kind of has a case to be like, well, maybe this isn't the truth. Maybe the truth is she took it another way and that we just don't know what that is. So as someone who tries to play it fair, I feel like this is what, should I tell you what I think? Okay, I don't know. Like, this is just me being a human being, and we have someone who's not in the sport now for 4 years, so I'm just going to have my personal opinion. I have no proof of this, but this is what I think happened.
Then you definitely shouldn't say it.
Well, no. Well, I just worked it. I think that she probably got Nandrolone ingested into her system another way that wasn't a burrito. And I think that other way could have been some other type of supplement or whatever, I don't know, that when she was consuming it, assumed that it was fair game and it wasn't an issue. And then kind of had trust that it wasn't an issue. And then it found out like, oh crap, that's what it was. I need to now say it was a burrito or whatever. But I honestly think, I think she unintentionally consumed it, but I think she unintentionally consumed it, not via burrito. That's my take. And we just don't know what that other unintentional way. Because like you said, the hair thing, like you would have to, she showed that she didn't have it in her system a long time. I think she was kind of, she thought she was running down the middle of the road when she was doing it, but it turned out she actually was close to the edge of a cliff and she didn't know. And then she fell off the cliff and she's like, oh crap, why? I had no idea I was over the edge of the cliff. Maybe it was a burrito that pushed me there. But I think it was something else, and we just will never know. And hey, so I guess it's kind of like I believe her and don't believe her at the same time. I don't believe the burrito story, but I believe the it's unintentional story. That is my
so. In the chat, someone mentions the 1 in 10,000, and you're a math guy here, Gordon, so you'll be able to understand this. The 1 in 10,000 isn't the probability that her explanation is true; it's a probability that a subset of the assumptions necessary are true. It doesn't explain the 2 to 3 times elevated level from other studies.
Yeah. Well, I think that 1 in 10,000 was part of the 2 to 3 part. Like, I thought that was added in to the probability. Like, the also, like, because you had the probability of it, of it being pork in the brief burrito, which, you know, that could happen because you see these taco trucks.
Yeah. Let me just say that's the only part of this where I have expert, analysis on it of getting my order wrong at food trucks, like very, very frequently. Yeah. So that part is where if I was on Kaz, I'd be like, okay, on that part.
Yeah, because every time me and JoJo go out for like food trucks in Austin, get some local Mexican food, every time we're eating it, we're like, every time we order a new thing, we're always like, yeah, I kind of believe Shelby now. Because every time we're eating it, we're like, this is kind of crazy. Because, you know, it's authentic. It's all over the place. But that is very – I feel like that's very likely that there's pork in a beef burrito. But the thing that starts becoming unlikely is that the pork is pig offal, that the pig offal is contaminated, that the pig offal that is contaminated at a level that can cause 2 to 3 times, you know, sample. So – that's when it starts becoming the 1 in 10,000, in my opinion, is when it goes from the pork is pig offal is contaminated. The contamination is overly contaminated, you know, and then just.
Yeah.
Odds are in your favor.
Yeah. But yeah, the sheer amount of it as well, too. I mean, I'm interested to see if they have another counter to this counter. Although at this point, right, they said when the news broke, the only remaining recourse was a Swiss tribunal past that, but there would need to be some sort of reason for them to take up the case. I don't know if that exists or not. Her lawyer was pretty forceful, as lawyers are, in saying that there was a case to be made. But as it stands, she's banned until the beginning of 2025, which obviously means she would miss the next 2 World Championships and then the next Olympics. So she'd miss 3 Global Championships. Well, 4 if you go back and count Tokyo. So it would be a significant ban. I will say this. I mean, I thought when I was looking through the report here, just it's interesting to see different, because like there's a bunch of other Bowerman athletes giving testimony here about it. Like they're putting their name out there and saying like they thought that she was clean, which, you know, if you're inclined to not believe her, you're going to be like, well, of course they're going to say that, like she's their friend, but they, you know, Schweizer, Frerichs, Centrowitz, all testified. I think this is the CADS report with the most references to The Bachelorette, because that night they were watching The Bachelorette and every single person giving testimony was sure to mention The Bachelorette because they had to get back in time to watch. Like they had, the timeline is not in question of what happened. Like I know everything about that evening at this point, just from reading like 6 or 7 pages of this thing and the testimony of how it went down, who was in line, who was where the sauces were. The line was too long because someone called ahead and said, hey, can you order for me? But then they ended up not ordering because the line moved so slow that the person who was in the back of the line wasn't even to the front of the line by the time the person who was late was getting there. So all those details are hammered out, but the issue now here is just trying to figure out what happened after that. So what do you, I mean, I just think this seems like this is it, right? I mean, unless there's some other, like there's only one appeal process available to them because they've already done CAS, and that appeal is going to require some sort of error, you know, prove some sort of error in a previous ruling. Now I'm guessing they have pretty good lawyers. They're going to try to go comb through and find some sort of issue to hear the case again, but the way they laid it out was pretty strong here.
Yeah, and that's why I think that my take, like I said, is that she unintentionally took it, but it wasn't from a burrito. It was from something else, and we don't know what it was. So,
yeah. Well, in which case, I mean, there's still the whole idea of strict liability, right? You're responsible for what goes in your body. Now, they're saying it should have been flagged not as a, you know, an intentional thing, but an unintentional thing. But if it was a substance that existed in some not food, right, that she took and it was contaminated, she's going to get less sympathy and obviously no sympathy from Kaz in that case, because they're just going to say, hey, look at the rule book. Doesn't matter at that point how it got in your system. It's in your system. All right.
Yeah.
So we'll leave that there. We'll leave that there. If anything new happens between now and Friday, we will discuss. There's a giant spider behind me, so I'm going to close this laptop. Gordon, talk about Brussels for a second. Where did this thing go?
I think we want to watch you. Oh, I want to see. Show the screen of him trying to kill the spider.
No, I shut the screen. It's like a daddy long leg. It's not even that scary of a spider. It's just very distracting, and it's enormous. Oh, talk about Friday's show. What time's Friday's show?
Oh, yeah. So Friday's show, so Diamond League Brussels is Friday. It ends around, I think, 3 o'clock Central Time. So we're going to go live right after the meet. So I'm not sure the exact time, but as soon as the meet's over, we're going to be live on YouTube once again, kind of similar to what we did last weekend or last Thursday. So, yeah, kind of trying to – whenever basically there's going to be a big live track meet, Diamond League level type stuff, and it's on the weekday, we'll go live right after because we find it – we don't want to wait. We don't want to sleep on the results. We just want to talk about them right away. So that's the plan for Friday's pod. It won't be at 9 a.m. It'll be right after the Diamond League.
All right. Update on the spider. I wasn't able to find it. It was gigantic. It was very skinny. It was on the wall right in front of me. It went straight down. I don't think it's poisonous or anything like that. But if I go down mid pod, yeah. Well, you're not here, so I was going to say send help. People, hashtag free spider is going on in the chat right now. I have not killed the spider, just for the record. I did not kill the spider. It's not because I didn't want to kill the spider. It's just I did not have the opportunity to kill the spider. And so far, it's alive. So if you see me jump around, that's why. Where? I just don't know how I lost it, dude. It was a. I'm not scared of spiders. I just want to be able to concentrate. No, I want to be able to concentrate on the show. And it was right in front of me, like right over your head as I'm seeing your head on the screen. It was right above you, crawling around. And it was massive. And I can't believe I lost it. Like, there's no reason why I should not be able to find it. I mean, this booth is really dark. It's spider season in Austin, man. There are so many spiders out right now.
Yeah, there's spiders. Yeah. My new house is very infested with lots of critters because we live in like a forest. So we see lots of bugs and insects that I've never seen before.
You're going to see me doing this the next 20.
We had a spider situation with JoJo on the pod a few weeks ago. That was so anyway.
I'm going to be talking. Let's talk I'm going to say like Safwan Hassan in the mile. And all of a sudden I'm going to go, whoa. Like that's how it's going to happen. I wrote four races down here. I wrote four of them. Man, people in the chat are really getting on me about the spider. This is ridiculous.
It's okay. Man. It's okay.
All right. Women's 200. Women's 5,000. Men's 100. Women's mile were the four I wrote down. You can pick where we start.
I think we start with women's 200. It's not a flow track podcast without some Sha'Carri Richardson talk. So Sha'Carri officially not ending her season. She's back on the track, this time in a 200. We saw that she opted to kind of forgo the 100 the rest of the year because she could have ran another 100 to try to qualify for the Diamond League 100 final, but she didn't. But she's in this 200, and she's going to be go open against a good field, right? You got Shaka Jackson in there, Dina Asher-Smith, Christine Mboma. So we have three women who have all broken 21.90 in their career. She's run 22 flat. I'm excited to see how this plays out. First of all, let's set the line at the place at 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think she finishes top two or outside of top two?
I think she finishes third. So I'll take the over on that. This is a good field. Ordinarily, you'd say, oh, she's not running the race with Fraser Price and Thompson Herat. She's going to have an easy go of it. No. Mboma's really good. Silver medalist, as you mentioned, sub 21.9 this year. Then you have Shrika Jackson, who her 200 performance, do you remember what happened in the Olympics in 200? She's a better 200 runner than she is in the 100, and she's really good in the 100, but she got bounced in the 100, didn't make it out of the first round. She's run 21.82. Asher-Smith's been banged up this year, so Richardson can beat her. But Mboma and Jackson, Masalingi's solid too, going against Richardson, coming off of a last place finish, and she hasn't run a bunch of 200s this year. She's only run two of them. She's definitely stronger in the 100. I think third place would be a fine result from her. Let's not get out of whack with the expectations here with her in the 200.
Yeah, I think if she got – here's the thing, though. Getting third, it's kind of crazy where we're going now. Like, now we're like, yeah, third would be great. Like –
But it's true. We don't need to do what people who never pay attention to track do, right? And just assume because they saw a person run great in one race or a couple races that that's their destiny. We know that it's more complicated than that. We know that this field is tough. So I think third would be solid here, especially coming off after pre. Okay, the spider's back. All right. Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember this Continental Tour Ostrava win in the 200. She ran 22.3 into a headwind. I still don't think that the 200 is her best event. I think the 100 is her better event. She has gotten a little better, though, in this 200. She's run 22.11, albeit that was, you know, in April. It's a long time ago. I think she needs, though, she needs to finish top three. I think if she comes out there and runs like a 22.6, provided it's good conditions, so a 22.6 where the rest of the field is running 22 low or 22.4 where everyone's running 21 high. I feel like if she gets like severely smoked in this race, You're going to start
that's thinking, a problem. Like, yes, that's
it's
a problem.
Be a problem.
Okay, the pressure should be lower in this race. I think that's good for her.
Yeah.
Because it's not the main event, and the top two in the world, two of the three fastest in history, aren't in the race, right? And anybody out like non-track people might say, oh, she's supposed to win every single time. But people who pay attention know how good Mboma is, and they know how good Shrika Jackson is. It's not in the United States. This should provide a lot lower pressure of an environment for her to perform. I'm really interested to see Mboma and Jackson here too, because we never saw Jackson have that apex 200 meter race that she deserved to have, because she didn't qualify out of the first round. And Mboma, we saw what she did in U20s, and you saw how fast she was in Tokyo. So this is going to be a great race. Shikari is part of that, but she's not the whole story.
Yeah, look at Jackson's season in the 200. She won every race except for Jamaica final, where she lost to Shelly Ann. But then she came back and she beat like the top people in that July 4th and that July 6th 200, where she won in 22-1 and 21-9. And then obviously that Heat 5 fourth place finish is like clearly not a legitimate run, because she ran 23-2. Clearly she can run faster than that. So Shirika may be seeing like an avenue of like, hey, Shelly Ann and Elaine Thompson are just on fire this season. I'm never going to break up that 1-2 punch in the 100. But in the 200, I do have an opportunity to maybe do something special and potentially win the Diamond League. So she probably looks at the 200 as still like, I haven't been proven yet that I can't be the best, because we know in the Olympics, she kind of wasn't in that final. So she probably thinks, if I was in that final against Elaine Thompson, maybe I'm the one running, beating Elaine Thompson. I don't know if we want to say that right now, but her resume shows that she was improving dramatically in the 200, and it makes sense. She is a 400 meter runner. We would think that she should be able to be even better in the two than she is in the one. So I'll be excited to see how she does. I think Shirika is going to beat Mboma, which would be kind of incredible, because if she beats the silver medalist, you're like, whoa. But
she was that good. That's why it was so surprising.
Yeah.
What happened there, and so frustrating for the Jamaican fans. I also like that women's sprinting right now is deep enough to where you can just basically have two separate groups, not even overlap in the 100 and 200, and get great races in both.
Yeah,
it would be even better if you had Thompson, Hurrah, and Fraser Price. But they can go at it in the 100, and then you still have this really compelling 200 right now because of how good the sprinting is right now on the women's side of it. So it's going to be a fun race. I give credit to Richardson for going back out there and racing. But this is going to be a tough field to beat. So if she does manage to win, this is a huge, huge victory. I think third is still solid. I'm with you, Jackson and Mboma. I think I would probably go Mboma and then Jackson ahead of Richardson is my pick, but this will be a fun one again, because we did not get to see Shirika Jackson in full flight in Tokyo, because that was the same, right? That was the same meet where she runs 10.76. She was capable of something special in the 200, but we never saw it.
How do we think Shikari's going to react to her finish? Whether obviously she wins, we know how she's going to react. If she gets like, let's just, I don't think she's going to win. So how do you think she's going to react to like another loss? Assuming she gets third or fourth or even second.
Didn't you just say last week that you're just not able to predict what she's going to do? Yeah. And now you're asking me to predict what she's going to do. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea.
You think she'll be as like lean in and as strong as she was from the 100 at Paris?
No, because I think there's going to be less attention. It's a 200. It doesn't have the other two big names in it. It's not in the United States. It's the magnitude of pressure is so much smaller. They're not going to have a preview about the Brussels 200. See, this is a good tweet. I like this. Only way from ninth is up. I love it. They're not going to interview and do a piece on Good Morning America about the Brussels 200 on Friday. I mean, if they are, yeah. If they are going to do that, let's just, you and I need to get our resumes in right now to some major networks, because if major networks are doubling down, not just on one random Prefontaine Classic race, but they're like investing in every single Diamond League, you and I need to make some phone calls. I don't think they are. I think that one was unique because it was the first race back. It was against Fraser Price and Thompson Hurrah. It was 100 and it was in the United States. And none of those things are the case with this race. So I think the pressure is a lot lower. Not going to be as overwrought.
Yeah. I think she's not going to have any interviews, right? Because I've seen some of these Diamond League zones. A lot of them are are pretty sparse. So like NBC's they cover it remotely. So.
Yeah, she might show up at the pre-race press conference and say something, but it just, nothing is going to compare to that pre-race. There's only one. This is probably the only time in history where they're going to have anybody is going to have a race like that, where you had this ascendant star gets a 6-week suspension, misses the biggest meet. In the meantime, someone puts out an all-time mark, and then they come back, and the other athlete is waiting for them, who many people thought could have contended with her. This is like a scenario that you can't replicate again.
Yeah.
Maybe
agreed.
Ever. Maybe ever.
So you're going with a third place finish?
Yeah, I'm going to go Mboma, Jackson, and then I'm going to go Richardson. Those are my three.
I'm going with a fourth place finish. I think Dina Asher beats her as well.
Yeah, she's just been struggling. Where's that whole – hold on, let me see this whole start list here, women's two. Anybody else? I mean, Masalingi is intriguing as well too, so I think that's going to be tough. The Belgian women are 23-second runners, and the German woman's 23. So really it's a five-person race, right? Two from Namibia, Richardson, Jackson, and Asher Smith. So – I think third would be solid. I think any lower than that would be for her at this point. But again, only way is up from ninth, right?
Unless you're in a field of 10, you know, like in a 1500, then you can go.
Unless she's in a 1500. If she's in a 1500, then things have gone horribly wrong. So.
All right. What else is on the docket?
What else is on the docket? Let's stick. We want to stick with the sprints and do men's 100, which stuck out to me. Interesting dynamic here in this field, because I think you'd have to say at this point Fred Curley's the favorite. 1984, coming off that 200 meter win, but also in the field is Trayvon Bromell. 977 is here, his PB and season best. They matched up at pre, but Curley got the better of him. Michael Norman is in there. Ferdinand Omora, who we talked about before, setting the Kenyan record. He's run 986. Sambina's run 984. So you have five guys with PBs sub 990 in this race. So it should be pretty good, but I think Curley's the favorite. Curley's got to be the favorite.
Well, finished second at the Olympics, and the guy who finished first at the Olympics isn't in this race. So, yeah, Curley's the favorite. And it's basically as deep of a field you could get. If you put Ronnie Baker in that field, then all of a sudden we're like, because obviously we knew Jacobs wasn't running the rest of the season. So you just throw in Ronnie Baker, and then all of a sudden that field becomes the best you could probably get at this time of the year. It's basically an equivalent to a Diamond League final. I am more kind of
DeGrasse.
I guess DeGrasse. Right? Yeah, DeGrasse. Yeah. There's no DeGrasse, but I take that back. Yeah, there's no DeGrasse. I'm kind of bummed, to be honest, that Fred Curley isn't doing the 400, because this was the last meet where he could have qualified to be in the 400 meter final at the Diamond League. He's clearly opting to do a 100, 200 double at the Diamond League. But I wanted him to do the 100, 400 double. It is what it is, but Hey, he says in his tweet, in his Instagram here, time to make this history now. The time is now. Hashtag phase 9. Mm-hmm. And then a couple sponsor hashtags. And then phase world record. Can't make this up. So phase 9. He's already in phase 9, right? He's run 9 point whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. when he says phase 9, what does phase 9 mean?
Phase world record. That's the next step. I think he's proven pretty much everything this year. Get another win, get a Diamond League win, adds to the resume, but you see how solid he's been all year. The 200 was a weak spot. He tightened that up over the past couple weeks. So it's been just an amazing year. But the 400, you bring it up because who's in this 400 now? Because we talked about Curly not doing it. Norman's in the 100, which is interesting. Again, that he's opted for the 100 ahead of the 400 here. You have Michael Cherry, Karani James. I mean, Karani's got to be the favorite because he medaled, right? And he ran sub 44 this year. But Cherry has the second best PB there. Gardner's not here. This Diamond League final is going to be open. It's going to be open for the taking. Michael Cherry could work his way in and win the Diamond League. And be a credit to him. Travis pulled up this great stat here. He's run 11 44s in a row, Michael Cherry. So if you had the thought in your head, if you're following track, an American track, and you're like, man, Michael Cherry, guy is just so consistent. It seems like he always runs 44. You are correct. Follow your instincts. It's absolutely true. He's run 11 of them in a row going back to May the 9th. You know, through the rounds, he's just clicking off these 44s as well, too. And he got another one in Rivereto yesterday where he runs 44.55, shutting it down at the end. I'm sure, no doubt, saving something for Brussels. So I think we could see, I'm going to say this right here. I think this the 44-second streak ends, Gordon, because he's going to run a 43. I think we're going to see a 43 from Michael Cherry in Brussels. So the streak's going to end, but it's going to end in a good way. And he's going to go sub 44.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of look at like this 44.5 as like a first round or a second round of a three-round race, he's kind of has this 44.5 kind of shutting it down in the final, you know, 25 meters. He's definitely setting himself up for maybe a potential PB in 43 seconds in this Diamond League. Yeah, we just talked about there's an opportunity in the 400, right? The 100, the 200, and the 800 all have U.S. world champions, so you can't get a bye in any of those events. But you can get the bye in the 400, and with no Stephen Gardner in there, with Randolph Ross basically being a NCAA top time from a long time ago, there's just there's an opening, right? Karani James, the Zambrano, Norman, and then Cherry. Like, and that's why I thought Fred Curley would notice this and be like, hey, I should get in there and potentially win a 400. He does say hashtag 42. So, hey, maybe get your 42 now in this Diamond League final. And maybe saving it for 2022. But, yeah, I like your idea that maybe Cherry is going to be the one who gets that bye. And then the U.S. will have a bye in the 1, the 2, the 4, and the 8 potentially.
I don't think he'll even need it, though, to be honest, because I think he'll qualify easy. Look at the 400 right now for the U.S. on the men's side versus the 2 and the 1. It's not close in terms of depth. Like, U.S. men's 200 right now, just say, for example, Norman runs it next year. So he's a 1970 guy. You have Lyles, you have Curley, you have Bednarik, you have Knighton, and Norman. That's ridiculous. You go in the 100, it's stacked too. Yeah, exactly. And that's not even mentioning guys like that who are right on the cusp. But someone like Bednarik, like, it's very clear where he's going. You're right, he's so solid. Curley, so solid. Lyles runs a 19.5 this year. Knighton, he's super young, so, you know, his future isn't secure, but to be that fast, you'd think he's as likely a candidate to improve as anybody else. And then if Norman gets in the mix, it's interesting that Norman could choose an event He might be end up being better in the 200 than the 400, but his path would be harder in the 200 than the 400 because, as you mentioned, like you look at the top times of the year, Randolph Ross's NCAA time, Norman's 44.07, Cherry's 44.2. Then you're going to, you know, Noah Williams running 44.3. But I don't know next year what the men's 400 in the U.S. is going to look like. There'll be another youngster who pops up because there always is because it's the 400. But that is just so much easier path than the 200.
Yeah. And so we'll see in this 400 with Cherry trying to make it into the final. And looks like Fred Curley is trying to go all in on the one, the two this year. Maybe we won't see a 400 from him. So it's a bummer, but I think we'll see. If he said he's going to do the 400 because he tweeted hashtag 42. So I want to see it. I want to see him in the four.
Can we pull up the Diamond League 400 standings again? I know we did that last time, but is it possible to pull those up again? I just want to see, because now we know who's in the Brussels race. So we know who's going to get points, but who's in the top eight spots right now to qualify for Zurich in the final. Because, you know, Zambrano obviously is solid. Karani James has been amazing this year in Tokyo, and Gardner. But if those guys aren't there, right? Like, the path is so open for Cherry. And he can factor in anyway, just because that consistency is awesome. All right, so is this the Diamond League standings here?
Yeah, so let's blow that up. Okay. Blow it up.
Okay, so.
Well, Cherry's going to need a win. He's going to need a win.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, okay. So if you're listening and not watching, Zambrano, James, Norwood, Michael Norman is there. Lendor, David Rhee, Fred Curley, and Bonavacia of the Netherlands are there. So 6 points is the last time in right now, but you're going to get a bunch of scratches here as well too. So I would think he'd be fine. I think he would get enough points to make it in. Cause the field right now, Bonavacia, Borley, Cherry, Doom, James, Lendor, Sakur, and Taylor. So we don't know who's scratching. I mean, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if Norman ran, but he hasn't run a 400 since Tokyo. And then Curley, maybe Curley's just going to stay in there if no one passes it. Maybe he'll do it.
No, because he's 6 points is going to get popped, bumped out for sure. Because Bonifacio is going to get at least a point in that he's in this Brussels race, so he'll at least get a point. He'll move up, you know. Because basically everyone in that field gets a point.
Yeah.
It's the top eight, right? So they all get a point. So
he needs at least – so Cherry would need at least – well, probably at least six. So he needs to finish no lower than third.
Yeah, but needs to finish second or first, which I think second, at least with Karani James in there, he can at least get second.
Yeah. Yeah. So if Rovereto was the first round, Brussels is like a semi, and then Zurich is his final, right?
Yeah, there you go. So maybe he only wants 44 low. And then he says he's 43 for the final.
It's going to happen this year. The streak will be broken, and he will rejoice because it will be good. Let's look at these distance races. Women's 5,000 featuring the athlete that you predicted will win a gold medal soon, Francine Niensaba. We get to see her in a 5,000 after she was DQ'd in Tokyo. She's going against Helen O'Beery, medalist, Ejigayute, who was right with her in that 3,000 in Paris. You also have Latensipet Gede in there as well. Big field here, Gordon. And then the other one I want to talk about was the women's mile featuring Safan Hassan.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to see all the same names, right? O'Beery, Gede, Klosterhoffen, and Niensaba. And the thing is that Niensaba's beaten all these women, right? She's beaten Tay, she's beaten Gede, she's beaten O'Beery. In the combination between the 3K and the 2 mile. So I think in any race that doesn't have Safan Hassan, Niensaba is the top dog. And it's kind of crazy to say that because if you look at the season's bests, she's only run 14:54 in the 5K this year. Let's go to Travis, go to the descending order list of 5K times. So Her time this year is ranked what in the world? Going down, going down, going down. Keep on going, keep on going. And there she is. So she has the 36th fastest time in the 5K, but in any, but clearly is the second best 5K runner in the world.
Yeah.
It's wild. She has yet to run a fast 5. I mean, she's run a 5K fast for her at that time, but clearly she's gotten better and gotten more used to this distance, to these 12 and a half laps. But for someone to be the heavy favorite and have the 36th best time in the country and it being her PB, it's just kind of wild.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a situation just based on weird circumstances. But so Tay up there has run 14:14 and she just beat her in the 3K, just to give you an idea of what she's capable of. So if they get the pace going, sub 14:15 is definitely a possibility here. It's hard to say because we don't have that many results from the Nsaba, and she got fifth in the 10K, but it seems as if she's better at, you know, the shorter you go, the better, which makes sense because she's a 155-800 meter runner. So the five, I'm assuming she's better at the 10, but maybe a little bit worse than she is at the 3K and the 2 mile, which is fine because she was number five all time in the 3K. So if she runs anywhere near that, even if she runs a tick slower, it's going to be a big performance. But now everybody knows. Now everybody knows, all right, we've seen what you've done two races in a row. They're not going to be surprised when she tries to make that big move with a mile to go. But it's just tough to beat her because of her kick as well, too. Nobody else has 155 speed.
Yeah, her 3K mark is equivalent to 1,247 points in the results score, which if you look at this screen, Colt, if you put it up, it would be basically the equivalent of running like 14:20 or 14, you know, 18 on this list. So technically her 3K mark is like putting her fourth best in the world in the 5K.
Yeah. And I'd say, again, and if you want to leave some wiggle room just to say, hey, she's going to be better at the shorter stuff than at the longer stuff, and say, all right, maybe she's only going to get 1,220 points or something. Well, that's still sub 14:30, which is really fast. But, and that's leaving a lot of cushion too. I think she can go faster than 14:30. So this will be a fun one. Safwan Hassan in the mile, Gordon, she is the world record holder in that event, 4:12, which would convert to about a 3:55-1500. So if she wants to break her mark again, I think she can do it. It's just a matter of we get this pacing going and it gets quick enough early on to see her do it. But 3:55 is well within her capabilities. I know she struggled, air quotes, in the 5K at pre going for the world record, but this world record is a bit easier than that one.
Don't you feel like, I'm starting to kind of feel bad for Safwan Hassan. I'm like, hey, just take a break. Like,
yes,
you've done enough running. You've done enough record attempts. You don't need to be doing these Diamond League stuff and more races. Obviously, we love it, right? Because it's great to watch her on the track because she's doing incredible things. But I just feel like she's going to be so tired, right?
Yeah.
But she's still going. She wrote, I gave it all for the world record, but my legs were too tired. Yeah, it's not just – it makes sense. Your legs would be too tired.
Yes. I feel bad for her hamstrings. I think I just – I don't know how she's been able to keep it going. But I do think you look at that mile mark, 4:12, like I said, equates to about 3:55. In fact, they had a 1,500-meter split when she ran it in Monaco, and it was they got her 1,500 split at 3:55:30. So she's run faster than that on three occasions. Two of them were this year. It's not a guarantee. It's certainly not a guarantee, but I think she can do it. You look at the rest of this field here. I don't think, because there's no Faith Kipyegon, if she's going to do this, she's going to have to do a lot of the work on her own here, which means she won't need to be worried about competition. It's just going to be a race against the clock. But ultimately, I think this just comes down to how much gas is left in the tank.
Yeah, and on your screen, they were showing that wasn't the field. That was the descending order list of 2021. If we do look at the field here, though, one thing I find is great is, hey, If your PB is 5:28 in the mile, you can be in a diamond league.
This is amazing.
Look at that. Esther Guerrero, 5:28 mile PB in a diamond. This isn't like the local one. This is the diamond league entry, and she is in there.
Guess what her 1500
JoJo
PB
ran
is.
Like a 5:02 the other, like 2 months ago. Maybe she should be in this diamond league final or diamond league.
This is
mile.
This goes in the misleading PB Hall of Fame, I think. Esther Guerrero, you get a reward. Because guess what her 1500 PB is?
What?
4:02.
Like 358 or 4:02. Okay. 5:28 PB in the mile.
Like, if they had them side by side and you didn't know anything about track, you'd say, man, it's like that last 109 meters, she must have really struggled. Took her more than a minute, 20 seconds to do that last.
Even
part.
Elise Granny, Granny has a 5:02 PB. It's great.
Yeah, because who runs the mile? Like, this isn't even on Esther Guerrero.
It's outdoors. It's an outdoor mile, that's why. Because people run it indoors, but, you know.
Right. But Guerrero, that 5:28 isn't even on her Tila Stepaia page. There's a 4:40 road outdoor mile. But they must have said, hey, what's your PB? And she's like, well, in sixth grade, I ran 5:28. Here's my field day ribbon. See, it says 5:28. Because no stats database was paying attention long enough to know that she had run 5:28. Yeah, Cranny's run 4:31, but that's got to be indoors. So they're not counting indoor PBs. So, yeah. But it's just, if you got a program to the meet and you're like, who am I going to pick? Like, you could probably get really good value on Esther Guerrero for a top three finish. Because it's like, who saw the 5:28 miler that got there? This is like when they were saying, like, the press coverage after Seidel qualified for the Olympics, and it was, woman qualifies for Olympics in her first marathon, as if she had never done any sort of advanced training before or never done long training runs. Like,
but she was women who Foot Locker champion, a cross country champion.
Yeah. That every great runner has to debut at some point. Like, no one starts on their fourth marathon. It's like, you know, Kipchoge debuted. We all debut at some point. Some are faster than others. Be a similar story. 5:28 miler gets third in Diamond League. Improbable story.
Yeah. Hey, man, I think we should wrap it up a little bit early.
Yeah.
I've been holding in. I've been holding in a bathroom trip for past like 50 minutes. So I'm ready. Did you get the spider?
The spider's, I don't want to be polarizing, but the spider's no longer with us. Yeah, it flew too close to the sun, AKA too close to my laptop. So I need to
get an email from PETA.
I need to get that sorted out. I need to get an email from someone at the office. Be like, yo, what's going on? What's going on over here? Putting me at risk. I was going to let it out, but it was just coming and coming and coming back at me. So I had no choice. So Friday, we're going to go live at about 3:00, maybe a little bit before 3 Central Time. And then we'll be done by 3:45. We'll recap Brussels. We'll see if Esther Guerrero can do the unthinkable and get a mile PR. We'll also talk about that women's 2. The men's 100. Me and Saba, Safan Hassan. It's going to be great. Thanks to Colt. Thanks to Travis. Subscribe if you haven't. And we will talk to you guys on Friday.
I got to go.